over live stream the afternoon service for whatever reason. I just didn't because we were doing Sunday school, if you want to call it that, Sunday afternoons. But I might go back to live stream the afternoon for the preaching portion for those that want it. Just wasn't going to do it today because the rest of the world doesn't know or care about family business. But where we left off this morning, we said this in it really. The fear of the Lord is the beginning. And the fear of the Lord is supposed to be the end. But it's also supposed to be everything in between. That everything I do and everything I am is supposed to be done with the mindset, the fear of the Lord and the glory of God. Whether it's conversation, whether it's conflict. Is this being done in the fear of the Lord as God would have it to be done? And is this done in such a way that glory can go back to God? Job 28 is the verse that was shared with me. It says, unto the man, he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. Because I was referencing, it's accurate. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Well, Job, God says the fear of the Lord is wisdom. All the way through. Proverbs 17 we read this morning. Be thou in the fear of the Lord all the day long. And just the creative wording of Isaiah, the fear of the Lord is his treasure. So we went through that. It's a heavier topic this morning, that the fear of God or lack thereof affects my walk. It affects my work and it affects my worship. And by introduction, we've said this a while ago, that God cannot forget anything. So God chooses not to remember our sin. Because he can't forget, he consciously chooses not to remember. We don't have that in the same way that God does. We usually can't remember. So he's telling his people, I can't forget your sin, so I've chosen not to remember it. You can't remember, so choose not to forget. He's saying this is a deliberateness. There's an on purpose. That I don't remember how I should, so I need to choose not to forget to fear God. To view him. To evaluate him properly. And we said viewing God as he is. As he declares himself to be. Viewing sin as it is. As God declares sin to be. And viewing myself as I am. As God declares me to be. The example I wanted to give of, I think a good example of this is a man that feared God would be Job. And we can get into other chapters of Job where Job gets into self-righteousness and Job says some things and has to stand up and give an account to the Lord. But Job is an example of a man who feared God. That's not my opinion. God said that about Job. He's a man who starting out properly views and evaluates God. Job is a man that has a proper respect and a reverence for God. And I'd say in his daily worship and lives in chapter 1, he has the right view of sin and self as far as he knew. In Job 1, it says, the Lord said unto Satan, hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil? Those things go together quite often in the scriptures, the fear of God and the abhorrence and avoidance of sin or evil. Somebody said it this way, when God is in clear focus, his presence eclipses all my other fears. So we're going to get back into that, the spirit of fear versus a spiritual fear. That when I have the right view and valuation of God, a spiritual based fear of God, his majesty, his presence, his realness to me eclipses my other fears. And then you will see in Job the struggle that's there, because he goes into saying other places, that which I've always feared has come upon me. But a spirit of fear versus a spiritual fear, a spirit of fear fears everything and everyone except for God. And we'll see that played out here in the scriptures. There's those that had a constant life of fear and worry and anxiety. A spiritual fear fears God first and foremost. And when I have an on purpose, remember to fear God and see God and revere God for who and what he is, a lot of my other fears can be handled by a proper fear of God. Somebody said, when you fear God, you have no need to fear anything or anyone else. But when we don't fear God, we tend to fear everything and everyone else. And when I have a spirit of fear versus a spiritual fear, a spirit of fear is where I have this fear about everything and everyone other than God. Then all I can see is all the temporary and tangible things of this life that I either have to live with or I can't live without. Well, if that ever happened, I can't live without that. Or God ever put this in my life, I can't live with that. That's a spirit of fear. It fears everything and everyone other than God, and it can only see the tangible, temporal things of this life. When I have a spiritual fear, a faith-based fear towards God, I view this life properly. I love what God loves like Job. I hate what God hates like Job. And overall, the temporal and tangible things that come or leave my life don't hold power over me. We went into it this morning a little bit, but it's to say this. We can't force God to fit into our way of thinking. I can't force God to do things as I would do them. God is way too high above our human understanding. That's not a negative thing. That means He is so high, He can see and perceive and discern things that we'll never see. And we see in Job, initially anyway, a spiritual fear of God. We'll see, and I'm not going to demean, but his wife was prone to a spirit of fear. And until you have sat where his wife has sat, don't judge her too hard. But she basically tells Job, how long are you going to put up with this? Curse God and die. She can see everything she knows and everyone she loves falling apart. And Job 2 then said his wife unto him, dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die. But he said unto her, thou speakest as one of the foolish women speak. What? Shall we receive good at the hand of God? And shall we not receive evil? In all this did not Job sin with his lips. Spirit of fear versus spiritual fear. One of the biggest mistakes we can make is thinking that God owes us anything. And she can't comprehend, Job, why are you not just demanding? Why are you not lashing out at God? Why are you not cursing God over this? And Job said, I fear God. And because I properly fear God, I receive whatever He gives, good or evil, because He's God. And if I let myself develop this mindset, well, God owes this to me, or God owes it to do it this way, or to keep this out of my life, or bring this into my life, that is to undermine, to destroy faith and the sovereignty of God. I'm not going to all the verses, I trust most of us know the story of Job. A spirit of fear will foolishly charge God. When things go awry or things go contrary to my will and my wishes, a spirit of fear has no spiritual fear. A spirit of fear has no problem saying exactly what they think about God doing what He's doing. God, this isn't fair. Hold on. That's foolishly charging God. That is to say, God, you got it wrong this time. God's never gotten anything wrong. You say, well, it's not, in my heart, I know this. It's not fair. Of course it's not fair. You know what fair would be? All of us going to hell. That's justice. It is not fair what we did to the creator of the universe. What creation did to creator was not fair. That's not fair. For he who is so big, he holds all the waters of the world in the palm of his hand. We talk about this about vacation Bible schools. When's the last time we even tried to wrap our mind around that God's hand is so big it could hold every ocean and every sea? A God that is so big that He said, I measure the universe with the span of my hand. That God can say, if I was to look at the universe, I'd say, it's about that big. A God that is so thoughtful that He has said, I've engraved your names on the palms of those hands. A God that's so kind, He has given man provision and purpose, yet was rejected for a piece of fruit. That's not fair. It's not fair for Adam and Eve to see all they saw about God and say, I'll take a momentary pleasure over you. That's not fair. It's not fair that a God that is so holy He can't even look at sin chose to become sin for us and stood in my place under the mighty blow of God's wrath. We ought to fear God enough to be grateful that we didn't get what's fair. Right. That we didn't get justice, but were extended mercy and grace. Right. A spirit of fear often will charge God foolishly. A spiritual fear, a godly fear, will maintain its integrity and faith in God, that God is always good and God is always right. So Job is an example here I wanted to put forth that shows that there are incredibly painful struggles in this life. There are hard questions in this life we may never get the answers to. Yet a spiritual fear, a proper fear towards God, says even in all of the darkness, I can accept that God is God, and as such, He doesn't owe me anything, including an explanation. Right.
Job said, God can take my physical health. God can take my financial security. God can take my friendships. God can do what He wants to my family. I will not curse God and die, but I can still lift holy hands with a humble heart and offer Him worship and say, the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. That's spiritual fear versus a spirit of fear. He says, God, it's not fair. God, it's not right. God, you got it wrong. The whole thing is, though, both of those usually can abide in our heart. But which one are we going to operate under? This isn't a message of condemnation. That, oh, you think I live by a spirit of fear and they live under spiritual fear. Well, I think we all battle trying to live under spiritual fear, the proper fear of God, versus giving into the spirit of fear. Because one is by and of God and one is not of God. I want to look at the history of the children of Israel. I don't have time to look at all of it today. Not just Judah in the book of Jeremiah, but as we said, fear is the beginning, fear is the end, and fear is supposed to be everything in between. That fear was in their conception. When God bought them and brought them, they were living in the spirit of fear. They were living their lives constantly fearing disease, death, the destruction of their people as they know it from existence. And God began to institute in them a spiritual fear. That you are living under the spirit of fear, but even before I bring you out, I'm going to show you a little bit of who God is. Moses, you're going to get to see me in a burning bush. And Moses never looked at fire the same way. When they get to the mountain in the wilderness and the mountain's on fire, the people are scared of God and say, we don't want to go over there. Moses looked at fire differently from the day he got to know the fire. And he began to show Moses what spiritual fear looks like. Moses used to have a spirit of fear. I've got to kill him and cover this up and flee. Now I got a spiritual fear about who God is. He began to reveal it in their early days before a deliverance to the children of Israel and to Egypt. All these plagues that were put out before them. Fear was in their beginning. The fear of the Lord is the beginning. But fear was in their continuing. He brought them through the wilderness to teach them, to prove them. And every step of the way, He provided for them and protected them and put up a pillar of fire at times and a pillar of cloud at times and gave them angels food and quail and water. He was trying to, I think, teach them in part, let's stop going by a spirit of fear and start developing a spiritual fear. For when I fear God as I should and I know God as I should, I have no reason to fear anything or anyone else. Exodus 19, I do want to go there perhaps. Exodus chapter 19 is one example here. Job being a favorable example in the early chapters. The history of Judah, or Israel I should say, before they even split. Exodus 19, he says in verse 1, in the third month, when the children of Israel were gone forth out of the land of Egypt, the same day came they into the wilderness of Sinai. For they were departed from Rephidim and were come to the desert of Sinai and had pitched in the wilderness and there Israel camped before the mount. Exodus 19:3. Moses went up unto God and the Lord called unto him out of the mountain saying, thus shalt thou say to the house of Jacob and tell the children of Israel, ye have seen what I did unto the Egyptians and how I bare you on eagle's wings and brought you unto myself. Now therefore, if ye will obey my voice indeed, and keep my covenant, then ye shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And ye shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and an holy nation. These are the words which thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel. And Moses came and called for the elders of the people and laid before their faces all these words which the Lord commanded him. And all the people answered together and said, all that the Lord has spoken we will do. And Moses returned the words of the people unto the Lord. And the Lord said unto Moses, lo, I come unto thee in a thick cloud, that the people may hear when I speak with thee and believe thee forever. I mean, just picture some of these stories. And Moses told the words of the people unto the Lord. And the Lord said unto Moses, go unto the people and sanctify them today and tomorrow and let them wash their clothes. I mean, I'm not going Old Testament here, but they didn't even go into the presence of God without even caring what they had on. And be ready against the third day, for the third day the Lord will come down in the sight of all the people unto Mount Sinai. They're supposed to be preparing themselves for the presence of God. And thou shalt set bounds unto the people round about, saying, take heed to yourselves. And he sounds like he's speaking words of warning, words of fear. Pay attention, take heed to yourselves that ye go not up into the mount or touch the border of it. Well, what's the big deal? Whosoever touches the mount shall be surely put to death. Well, then I have a holy fear what's happening on that mountain, that if I even touch it, I die. There shall not a hand touch it. We shall surely be stoned or shot through. Maybe I do like the Old Testament. Whether it be beast or man, it shall not live. when the trumpet soundeth, they shall come up to the mount. And Moses went down from the mount unto the people and sanctified the people, and they washed their clothes. And he said unto the people, be ready against the third day. Come not at your wives. And it came to pass on the third day in the morning that there were thunders and lightnings and a thick cloud upon the mount, and the voice of the trumpet exceeding loud, so that all the people that was in the camp trembled. Well, I thought they had a spirit of fear about death and disease and slavery. Well, they're developing a spiritual fear about God. And Moses brought forth the people out of the camp to meet with God. And they stood at the nether part of the mount. And Mount Sinai was altogether on a smoke, because the Lord descended upon it in fire. And the smoke thereof ascended as the smoke of a furnace. And the whole mount quaked greatly. And when the voice of the trumpet sounded long and waxed louder and louder, Moses spake, and God answered him by a voice. And the Lord came down upon Mount Sinai on the top of the mount. And the Lord called Moses up to the top of the mount, and Moses went up. And the Lord said unto Moses, go down and charge the people, lest they break through unto the Lord to gaze, and many of them perish. He said, go remind them. And let the priests also which come near to the Lord sanctify themselves, lest the Lord break forth upon them. And Moses said unto the Lord, the people cannot come up to Mount Sinai, for thou chargest us, saying, set bounds about the mount and sanctify it. They had set up these barriers. And the Lord said unto him, away, get thee down, and thou shalt come up, thou and Aaron, with me. But let not the priests and the people break through to come up unto the Lord, lest he break forth upon them. Well, we can jump over to chapter 20, verse number 18. He goes down and gives them the Ten Commandments, if you want to call it that, in a nutshell. And in verse 18, all the people saw the thunderings and lightnings and the noise of the trumpet and the mountain smoking. When the people saw it, they removed and stood afar off. Hey, there's no chance they're breaking through and clambering up the mountain. They're terrified. And they said unto Moses, speak thou with us, and we will hear, but let not God speak with us, lest we die. And Moses said unto the people, fear not, for God has come to prove you, and that his fear may be before your faces, that ye sin not. And the people stood afar off, and Moses drew near unto the thick darkness where God was. Just saying, they started in fear. They're supposed to be continuing in fear. God is saying, let me reveal more of me to you. And as you have a proper view of me and a proper evaluation of me, the result is your fear will be increased. And that will be displayed in how you walk, in how you work, in how you worship. And Moses said, don't be afraid. Don't fall down and cower and say, oh, this is something to be scared of. We can't have a relationship with God. He said, God wants you to have a relationship, but within the boundaries of a holy fear of who God is. Fear was to be their conception. It was supposed to be their continuing. It was supposed to be for their conquering. They were supposed to enter the promised land and live by the same fear of God. And he said, don't forget. Don't forget who bought you. Don't forget who brought you out, who brought you through. And warn them, when you go in there, don't forget God. Don't forsake God because you stop fearing him. You want to turn to Deuteronomy chapter 8. Deuteronomy chapter 8. Maybe somebody would say unaudibly. No, I don't want to. And Deuteronomy chapter 8. I'm not saying you have to turn. I'm just saying it helps sometimes. Keeps us awake. Gets the blood flowing. Helps us see the words here. Deuteronomy chapter 8. I thought my timer said 10, but it says 18. So we're 18 minutes in, so I got to be aware. They're supposed to start in fear and finish in fear and everything in between. Moses gives them this exhortation or this recount in Deuteronomy chapter 8 of what was supposed to happen. All the commandments which I command thee this day, verse 1, shall ye observe to do, that ye may live and multiply and go in and possess the land which the Lord sware unto your fathers. And thou shalt remember all the way which the Lord thy God led thee these 40 years in the wilderness, to humble thee and to prove thee, to know what was in thine heart, whether thou wouldest keep his commandments or no. And he humbled thee and suffered thee to hunger and fed thee with a manna. Well, those aren't things we want to do without. Those aren't things we want to go through. He's trying to move from a spirit of fear to living by a spiritual fear. And a spiritual fear says, God is right. God is right on time. Whatever he brings, I need. Whatever he takes, I don't. He humbled thee and suffered thee to hunger and fed thee with manna, which thou knewest not. Neither did thy fathers know, that he might make thee know that man doth not live by bread only, physical things, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of the Lord doth a man live. Thy raiment waxed not old upon thee, neither did thy foot swell these 40 years. Some of us, we can't go 40 minutes without a swelling of the body somewhere. 40 years. Thou shalt also consider in thine heart that as a man chasteneth his son, so the Lord thy God chasteneth thee. Therefore thou shalt keep the commandments of the Lord thy God to walk in his ways and to fear him. For the Lord thy God bringeth thee into a good land, a land of brooks, of water, of fountains, and depths that spring out of valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley and vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of oil and olive and honey. You say, why are you reading all these things? Because they began to develop a mindset. I have everything I ever desired. Why do I need God? A land, verse 9, where thou shalt eat bread without scarceness. Thou shalt not lack anything in it. A land whose stones are iron and out of whose hills thou mayest dig brass. When thou hast eaten and art full. They're supposed to remember something on purpose. Don't forget. Then shalt thou bless the Lord thy God for the good land which he hath given thee. Beware that thou forget not the Lord thy God in not keeping his commandments and his judgments and his statutes, which I command thee this day. Lest when thou hast eaten and art full, and hast built goodly houses and dwelt therein, and when thy herds and thy flocks multiply, and thy silver and thy gold is multiplied, and all that thou hast is multiplied, then thine heart be lifted up, and thou forget the Lord thy God, which brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, who led thee through the great and terrible wilderness, that's Jeremiah 2, wherein were fiery serpents and scorpions and drought, where there was no water, who brought thee forth water out of the rock of flint, who fed thee in the wilderness with manna which thy fathers knew not, that he might humble thee, and that he might prove thee to do thee good at thy latter end. And thou say in thine heart, my power and the might of my hand hath gotten me this wealth. But thou shalt remember that the Lord thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant which he sware unto thy fathers as it is this day. And it shall be, if thou do at all forget the Lord thy God, and walk after other gods, and serve them and worship them, I testify against you this day that ye shall surely perish, as the nations which the Lord destroyeth before your face, so shall ye perish, because ye would not be obedient unto the voice of the Lord your God. Fear was their conception. It was supposed to be in their continuing. It was supposed to be in their conquering. Where Moses says, when we cross over and get in there, don't you forget God. Don't you stop having a healthy fear of God. You on purpose remember who bought you and brought you and led you all the way through here. You couldn't buy yourself. You couldn't bring yourself. You couldn't get yourself here. And you're going to get so fat and sassy, you're going to say, I'm all set. Why do I need God? And so that's the beginning, the end, the middle. Israel didn't even make it that far. We're not even dealing with Jeremiah 800 years later, where Judah is committing harlotry under every tree, spiritually speaking. They don't even make it over Jordan the first time. God's done all this work to try to lead them from a spirit of fear into spiritual fear. From fearing everything and everyone to fearing God alone. And they make it to the Jordan. They can see the land of promise. And a spirit of fear takes over. Where a sense of fear or a spiritual fear of God should have been. We'll turn one place and give you an example here and be done. Numbers chapter 13. We saw that they began in fear. They were supposed to finish in fear. They're supposed to continue everywhere in between in fear. And just keep fearing God, trusting God, obeying God. And God can take care of everything and everyone else. They make it all the way up to the border. And I'm not judging them too harshly here. I'm saying it's human nature for all of us. And the spirit of fear takes over again, where there should be a spiritual fear by now. And it's human nature that I've got to remember on purpose to develop this fear of God, this spiritual fear of God, rather than a spirit of fear. In Numbers 13, you know the story without reading the whole chapter, because I can't pronounce all the names anyway, and Brother Josh Katie's away today, so we can't read all the missionary names for us here. And that's why I let him read the letters, so I can't read the names either. They have sent out the spies, and the spies are coming back. This is not Moses saying, hey, we're crossing over. It's been 40 years. This is they have come up the first time and they're looking across and God tells them, send out some spies. Let's see what their report is. We'll jump all the way down because we need to be done here in a minute to verse 25. They returned from searching of the land after 40 days, these spies. They went and came to Moses and to Aaron and to all the congregation of the children of Israel unto the wilderness of Paran to Kadesh. And brought back word unto them and unto all the congregation and shewed them the fruit of the land. And they told him and said, we came unto the land whither thou sentest us. And surely, in a nutshell here, they're going to say everything God said was true. Surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, there's that spirit of fear. The people be strong that dwell in the land. And the cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan. They're beginning to see this is going to be a dogfight the whole way. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it." But the men that went up with him said, "We be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we." And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, "The land through which we have gone to search it, it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof. It's rough terrain, brambles, bushes, whatever. And all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which can't come of the giants. And we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight." Well, for one, you don't know what you were in their sight because you didn't ask them. When they got to Jericho, they asked Rahab the harlot, and she said, "They're shaking in their boots because we've heard what God has done to your enemies everywhere else." Spirit of fear doesn't have to make sense. They get sent in, they come back, and what God has said, "I'm trying to develop in you," begin in fear. Continue in fear. End in the fear of the Lord. Fear me, nothing else. Or fear everything else at the cost of fearing me. They start fearing giants, and they stop fearing God. The view and valuation of the giants that they're facing increase, and the view and their valuation of God decreases. And it results in them forgetting and forsaking God and His will for their life in the simple statement, "We be not able." And if I was Caleb, which I am not, I would have said, "No duh." But that's not what Caleb said. In a nutshell, Caleb reminds them, "You never have been able. You never had to be able. You never had the ability by yourself. We didn't buy ourselves out. We didn't bring ourselves out. We didn't guide ourselves through the wilderness. All we had to do was trust and obey." He stills them. He's reminding them that if we fear God and trust God and obey God, there is nothing else we need to fear. Spirit of fear versus spiritual fear. In the very next verse in chapter 14, do they listen to Caleb? All the congregation. I mean, they didn't even see what the spies saw, but at their word, at this revelation of a spirit of fear, all the congregation lift up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, and the whole congregation said unto them, "Would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God we had died in this wilderness. And wherefore hath the Lord brought us unto this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be a prey? Were it not better for us to return into Egypt?" That makes no sense. Fear doesn't. They tell Moses, "We would have been far better off if we never came out. God forbid we ever look at the wicked and say it would have been a better off if I never got saved to begin with." God said if you had began in fear, you continued in fear. If you had gone on, you could have conquered by fear. Spiritual fear. Not a spirit of fear. And Caleb says, "Be still and listen to me. You don't have to be able. We've never been able. God got us this far. God will get us home." You say, what are you saying? In this story, as a side note, a spirit of fear is far more contagious than spiritual fear. Yeah. Well, practically, 2020, no churches wanted to stay open. As soon as it became the thing, there they went, left and right, left and right, left and right. And a spirit of fear consumed men of God that shouldn't have known better. Men of God that since then have shown this wasn't a one-time thing. The same men of God endorsed the Asbury non-revival and other nonsense things. The lack of discernment amongst God's men is alarming today.
Yes, sir.
We had a meeting which was to take the 6 or 7 guys in the state and say, "Let's call on our brethren. Stop leaving us 6 out here hanging to dry. It ought not be just one of us. And all of us should fear God more than man. Stand with us. Open your churches, etc." And did it have any effect? Zero. Because a spirit of fear is more contagious than spiritual fear. It's not always a numbers game. Yes, 10 were evil, 2 were good. 10 lived by a spirit of fear, 2 spies had spiritual fear. So what are you saying? I'm saying a reminder for me and for us. I better be careful what I speak into the heart of others. I better be careful in my converts, in my Christian friends, in my children. Am I speaking a spirit of fear or spiritual fear? 2 million people are ready to go back and clink their chains back on and be slaves because a guy said, well, we can't do it. God died in the wilderness somewhere. And Caleb, if I was, have you lost your mind? Well, just trying to keep it real. No, we create spirits of fear in others. And for me, it's I need to learn this already exists in all of us, a spirit of fear, which is not the gift of God, and the potential for spiritual fear. And I need to prove and learn one versus the other, spiritual fear of God, nothing else, versus a spirit of fear where I fear everything but God. And take it a step further, where these 10 or 12, 10 trusted men turn 2 million hearts around on a dime by simply speaking fear, the wrong fear. There was a day where one man came down a mountain and spoke spiritual fear to 2 million people, and they said, lead on. And now there's a day where it isn't even the leaders, but the spies speak a spirit of fear, and 2 million people say, we're done. The psalmist said it in Psalm 78, and I know we're over time, but a passage we've been through multiple times. The psalmist said, I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known and our fathers have told us. We will not hide them, these truths. We will not hide them from their children, showing to the generation to come the praises of the Lord and his strength and his wonderful works that he hath done. For he established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers that they should make them known to their children, that the generation to come might know them, even the children which should be born, who should arise and declare them to their children. 4 or 5 generations now. What are they declaring? The strength of God, the praises of God, the wonderful works of God, that this generation declares unto that generation, to that generation, to that generation, for this result, that they might set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments. So important that I learn to develop and operate by spiritual fear of God and not a spirit of fear about everything and everyone. And while I do so, I impact and influence others the same, and I instill in them, he's worth trusting. He's worthy of praise. He needs to be feared. And if you get to know him, you know you have nothing to worry about. You're going to face things you can't do. You're going to face questions you have no answers to. You're going to go through imaginable pains and loss in life. And dear convert, I'm telling you, dear child, I am telling you, fear not, but God. He brought us this far. He'll get us through the next leg of the journey. So I got to stop, I guess. Just saying, you can see if you look back through Israel, a spirit of fear present all along. Their doubts, their complainings, their murmurings, can God, will God, should have stayed in Egypt. There will always be something or someone to fear. But we don't have to live under it. And he makes it pretty clear in chapter 14. When the people say, oh, we're headed back, let us make captains. That God brought us this far, but we want to go back. But to go back, we have to have a human instrument lead us, because God doesn't go back. God's not going to backslide with me. God's not going to take me back to a spirit of fear. They said, let us make captains like Jeremiah 2 to lead through the wilderness, to lead us to a land of deserts and of pits, through a land of drought and of shadow of death, through a land that no man passed through and no man dwelt. A spirit of fear doesn't have to make sense. Let us make captains to take us back. Back where? Through a land nobody can navigate? Through a land no one can live in? God had to bring you through it, but you're going to take your chances. If you go back, you go back by yourself. God's not going that way.
Caleb said, you can. But you're right. You better pick a captain because God's not leading that way. God is not in the spirit of fear. God is trying to develop spiritual fear. God doesn't change. There's not even a shadow of turning in God. Listen, we need to recognize these words we've used. Where am I at with my fear of God? Repent of where I've slid back from the fear of God, a spiritual fear, into the spirit of fear, and return to the holy fear of God in my walk, in my work, in my worship. Not a message of condemnation, a message of challenge. God, teach me. The psalmist said, come ye children, hearken unto me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. It's a request we can make to God. God, teach me to fear you. Increase my spiritual fear. Decrease my spirit of fear. Both might battle. Only one can win. Only one can decide. Only one can we live by. Spirit of fear or spiritual fear.